in half an hour.
Representative Cameron. Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development. A few announcements to begin. Representative Nathanson is on the road with the Ways and Means Committee, so she's excused today. And despite our full-looking agenda, I'm about to make it a lot less full. So I want to run down what's printed and explain what's going to happen amongst the things that are on that list. We are not going to be hearing House Bill 3468. House Bill 2657 is going to be carried over. Some work yet to be done on that. House Bill 2277 also carried over, pending some additional work, as is House Bill 3137. We are going to hear House Bill 2016. I'll come back to that in a minute. We are going to hear House Bill 3438. House Bill 3139 will not be heard. And on the back, House Bill, Senate Bill 612 will be carried over. So that leaves us, again, with House Bill 2016 and House Bill 3438 to hear today. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2016. Troy, if you could give us a summary while Representative Berger joins us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2016 modifies definition of recreational purpose for purpose of limiting liability of landowner that allows to land for recreational purposes.
Representative Berger.
Thank you. Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, for the record, Vicki Berger, State Representative, District 20, which is the Salem area. And interestingly, I also represent Independence, which has an air park, and it has tuned me in a significant way to aviation issues. And I bring before you something related to aviation. And I thought, since this is the Economic Development Committee, that I'd talk a little bit about economic development as it relates to my bill. I know all of you are well aware of the Oregon Business Plan and their notion that we do best if we cluster our industries and build on what we have rather than striking out in new places. And in fact, if you go to their website, they have identified an aviation cluster as being really important to the state of Oregon. If I could quote from their website, this is the Oregon Business Plan, about this aviation cluster. Although most manufacturing of aviation components and kits is centered on or near public use airports, supply chain and distribution from firms exist in at least 15 Oregon communities in both urban and rural areas. They produce or manufacture for avionics, airplane components and assembly, raw materials for fabrication, and unique components for specialty aircraft. Aviation customers include individual purchasers as well as major airframe manufacturers in other states. Oregon's kit plane manufacturers also provide over 70% of all the kit planes sold within the United States each year to global customers. Of all the kit planes sold within the U.S. each year to global customers, also provide over 70% of all the kit planes sold within the U.S. to global customers. The industry cluster also includes businesses providing local fabrication services, which lead to robust maintenance and repair services for all sizes of aircraft. Overall, the Oregon Aviation Cluster consists of over 300 aviation companies in 78 of Oregon's cities. Direct employment, 6,858. These are 2011 numbers. Average wage, $62,395. And the total firms, 123. This was a 2007 figure. So these aren't necessarily up to date. But I bring this to you because, as someone who talks to economists all day and is pretty aware of what drives our economy, people don't realize we not only do kit planes and other components, we do helicopters, we do blimps, we're an aviation state. And I think it behooves us, in recognition of that, to do what we can to support aviation any way we can. And I bring before you a bill that may not be the whole thing, but I think it's part of this general picture. This bill puts non-commercial aviation activities in the recreational use statute. In other words, what we are saying to Oregonians is we think that aviation activities is an important part of our mix, that aviation activities should be allowed in a recreation setting. This is not some new wild idea. There's an awful lot of states that do this, and I think folks behind me who are more connected to this whole issue will tell you which states, or you can ask and we'll get you. So this is not some new wild idea. I think as important as aviation is to Oregon, and the notion and the enthusiasts that are in my district, and let me tell you, they are enthusiastic, they are responsible, they aren't wild and crazy daredevils. These are really good pilots in our state. And with the vast number of spaces that we have, I think this would be a very suitable thing for us to encourage within the statute. And I commend to you a number of friends and pilots behind me who will speak further to what this means to them. So thank you very much. I would invite questions as long as it isn't involved too much flying, because the last time I had a pilot's license was in 1970.
Representative Berger, I've never had one, so you're ahead of me. Are there questions for Representative Berger?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we have a number of people who are here to testify. There are a lot of people who have signed up and indicated not testifying, which we're happy to know about your presence. It runs some risk of me being confused and calling people who didn't intend to testify or missing someone. So if I miss someone or call someone by mistake, please let me know. But otherwise, I'll proceed down the list and start with Phil Olson, Bob Maher, and Mitch Swecker. Let you gentlemen decide the order. Although, Mr. Director, since you're sitting and ready, maybe you should start.
Good morning, for the record.
Good afternoon. It's not in the morning anymore.
I'm sorry, good afternoon. Representative Reed, Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Mitch Swecker. I'm the director of the Department of Aviation. I come here to offer the support of the Aviation Board for this. They unanimously voted to support this bill. And I'm also here to answer questions. The board has submitted a letter. I won't read it, but I'll be available for the committee to answer questions as required.
Thank you, sir. Gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Phil Olson. I reside at 23725 Southeast Old Bethel Road in Amity, Yamhill County. I currently have two personal use strips, one on my farm in Amity, another one in South Harney County, south of Steens Mountain Recreation Area. This bill is really simple. I think some people make it a little more complicated than it really is. This is completely a landowner protection bill, is what this is. This bill does not take away or reduce any rights that landowners currently have. They continue to enjoy those rights with a hopefully successful package of this bill. As a partner with this, or along with this bill does not give pilots any further authority to do anything that they can do right now. A little bit frustrating. So that's pivotal on this. We're not saying land anywhere you want. The laws, both FAA, federal laws, and state of Oregon laws, continue. It won't affect land use regulation in any way. It's a landowner liability issue. House Bill 2016 is fully in line with Oregon State Statute 105-676, Oregon's Recreation Public Policy Position, which states, "The Legislative Assembly hereby declares it is the public policy of the State of Oregon to encourage owners of land to make their land available to the public for recreational purposes." That's what this bill does. One little bit problem with the bill, with the law that we have it, when we have a statement that says recreational uses, including but not limited to, and it states some. On my farm in Amity, I have a fishing lake, about a 12-acre lake full of bass. I freely open that for no charge to people come in. We have Boy Scouts, other families come in and they fish on it. I also have an airstrip about a quarter mile away on this farm. People will call. I've had people call out of state. They'd like to come in and spend some money in our wineries, which were out in that area, and we'd like to land on your strip. And I said, whoa, you know, there's some cloud potentially on whether this is my liability exposure on this. That needs to be cleaned up. I need to have, I think, the same protection on recreational use on my airstrip when it's recreational purposes as I do on my lake. Currently, there are 18 states across the country that have recreational use or have aviation listed within the recreational use statutes. Our neighboring states that have it are Washington, Idaho, Montana, and Utah. Slightly different language in all of them, but basically it says recreation is a aviation is a valid recreational opportunity, and they're encouraging that within their liability protection. Even the federal government. I did some searching in 2010. There were bills passed and recommendations passed in our federal government recognizing recreational aviation as a valid use of our federal resources on their mandated or their administered property. This is a win-win situation. It gives additional liability protection to landowners without taking any rights away of that ownership. There are significant side benefits encouraging aviation. The more people that fly around, more apt to land at people's strips or more strips to be put in. My strips that I have, both of those have been approved by the state and federal, and they are, one of them is chartered, one is not, but there's regulation involved with this, and we do all that, but it'd be nice to offer those to people who want to land down there and hike into the BLM ground or other recreational grounds in the area. I think you get the gist. Today we have an opportunity to clearly support Oregon's recreational public policy, to give more liability protection to landowners, and to facilitate Oregon's jobs and our economy. So I urge you to support the bill. There is no cost, which is a nice thing for you folks to deal with, to Oregon taxpayers for this. So join the crowd with the other 18 states. That's my plea. Thank you. I'm open to any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. I think we'll hear from your colleague first and then see if there are questions.
My name's Bob Marr. I live west of Monmouth. Both my brother and I are owners of small airstrips there, and we're supporting this bill in the hope that it will open up some private airstrips like ours for public use. For example, I've had numerous people call me up and they say, hey, we want, since you're within walking distance of Western Oregon University, we'd like to land at your place and walk down to the college and see our son. Well, and I have to say, you're going to have to land over at Independence State because I'm not so sure how this liability lawsuit possibilities are. And so I kind of feel like if we could get more protection, I'd be more apt to say, hey, sure, I'll help you park your airplane. I'll give you a ride into town. But in the present time, I don't feel like I should be able to do that. So as far as I'm concerned, being in this business for, well, I shouldn't say business, being a private pilot for 50 years, I was an airline pilot for 34 years. I've been an airport owner for 38 years. And I think this, unless there's any reason that maybe you guys can point out to me why this thing shouldn't pass, I'd like to know about it. Basically, two points that I want to bring out. One of them is this change in the Oregon law will help protect us landowners from these frivolous lawsuits. And number two, it will help promote aviation in this state, both economically and so on, because pilots will fly someplace rather than drive to them if they can. And that's why people would fly to my strip and go to the college rather than drive. And so I want to thank you for letting me testify today. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions for this panel? Representative Doherty.
Yes. I have a couple of questions about on liability. I was reading the bill. So does this mean that, you know, you have a private strip that I could pay a fee to come in, and because the bill refers to if you charge a fee, then the liability is gone.
That's right.
Yeah, and so
commercial.
So the question is, if I flew into your place and I hit a bump and my plane went like this, that I could not sue you. Is that what that means?
Because it's the same sort of thing on hunting lands. If I go to private hunting lands.
It separates commercial, if you will, a charge. The charge follows.
I'm sorry. I'm Phil Olson. The charge is what screws this all up. What we're trying to do is say, look, we got a place. If you want to land it, land on it. There are separate regulations from the federal government. Has very strict ones that mandates the pilot check that out before it happens. There are not any pilots that close their eyes, pull the paw out, and see what happens when they hit.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. And they're really, so no, to answer your question simply, there's no charge. This is just free of charge. Come on and fish my lake. Come on and land my strip. No money. If money enters in, that becomes a commercial enterprise.
Yeah. But if something happens on that land, then you would be not
on a commercial? Yeah, on a commercial enterprise?
No, on what the bill is.
What the bill is, if something's happened on a recreational, non-charge basis, then we're not then the onus for the liability shifts to away from us.
Got it.
That's really what it says right now in the law. It says recreation use. The problem is the way it's, because aviation, it creates a cloud. When it says limited but not, when it says recreation purposes, including but not limited to, see, if someone comes after me, my first task is to triple my attorney's fees and say, you were here recreationally, and once we prove that in court, then it slides into this law. This prevents that whole deal. As we all know, protection of us in legal matters is oftentimes more expensive than the final act.
Okay, you answered my question. Thank you.
Further questions?
I talked to you. You've got a moment.
Yeah.
See, thank you very much for your testimony. We have a number of other people. We'll note that there are a number of pieces of written testimony in OLIS that you may want to review. Some of them, but not all of them, in support. Next up, Mary Rosenblum. Like all the rest of this page not testifying, and Jim Welsh. Is there anyone else I've missed? I think I'm distinguishing between those who are wanting to testify and those who signed up and indicated not testifying. I don't see anyone else, so it's up to you two. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Chairman Reed, members of the committee, Mary Rosenblum. I'm here today as a landowner. I live on Deepsar Park, 24198 South Skyline Road in Canby. And I am one of the homeowners associations that's legally responsible for a 2,600-foot grass strip. And I want to reiterate what you've been hearing, that this is really an issue of recreational activity, but also it has a safety angle that we haven't yet considered. If we have friends that come in and land on the strip and they make a mistake and they tumble their aircraft, you know, we are potentially liable. There are numerous instances of people who have found, as you've heard, small strips out in areas near a location they would like to visit where they've asked permission to land and the owner has said, well, no, because I will be liable if anything happens to your airplane. There is an instance of a very popular local strip not far from Hillsboro where someone did try and take off, making a bad pilot choice. The owner tried to stop the person. The person took off anyway, crashed and killed himself and his passengers, and the insurance company sued the owner and cost him the property. This is the reason that people don't want to allow people on their land. Even though there was a best effort made on the owner's part to stop this from happening. So these are the concerns, and we pay $2,800 a year in insurance for that strip. Hopefully that will go down. One of the things to consider is that right now with the economy the way it is and the cost of recreational activities, the government is having to limit more and more how much they can support and permit recreation on public lands. And so here we are making it possible for private owners to say, yes, come on my property, land your plane, go fish in the creek, go hike, and it won't cost the state or the federal government a dime. That's a good deal. The other concern that we haven't really touched on is a safety issue. There are numerous NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, reports of pilots who have overflown private landing strips to try and stretch an engine out emergency to a public use airport. There is a perception on the part of many pilots that private strip owners and private landowners are very hostile to people landing. And in the stress of an emergency, it's very easy for someone to make a poor choice and feel they must go to a public use airport. So a better sense that they are more welcome on a private strip that's out in the middle of nowhere may actually save us one or two, fatal encounters. That's something that we haven't really talked about yet. But essentially, this is a win-win, as Mr. Olson said, that we are simply making it more possible for people to enjoy recreational activities without incurring an unfair liability to the landowner. And I'll happily entertain any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Note that you're here in your capacity as a landowner, but for the committee's benefit, you might mention your other role, too.
Yes. Most of the time when I'm here as the president-elect of the Oregon Pilots Association.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mr. Welch.
Chair Reed and committee members, Jim Welch here on behalf of Oregon Cattlemen Association, and they definitely represent thousands of acres around Oregon and some good landing areas. And some of the members are pilots themselves. And they do have, they provide recreational opportunities on some of those ranches also. And so I think what you just heard as testimony is really in line with our concerns also. The liability issue must be addressed for us to be certainly a supportive or there to be any activity in the future for recreational concerns. And I think that we will just leave it at that right now. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for this panel? I don't see any. We appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much. That completes the list of people who have signed up. Is there anyone else who wants to be heard on House Bill 2016? I don't see anyone. Representative Berger, we appreciate you bringing the bill. If you have any closing comments, we'd be happy to hear them. Otherwise, we'll look forward to being back to you.
Thank you.
Normally, get asked for a close.
Well, it's a special Friday.
And it's late, and I know. Thank you very much for hearing this bill. I think you'll understand this is an important piece for those who are enthusiastic about airplanes, and I think this is a real encouragement for not only our economic development, but for folks to, if you haven't seen Oregon from inside a small airplane or do, it's a wonderful place from there, and let's all enjoy it. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2016. And before I open a public hearing on House Bill 3438, I'm going to hand the gavel to Vice Chair Benz. I need to step out for a couple minutes, but I'll be right back. So open a public hearing on House Bill 3438.
Troy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, House Bill 3438 permits the city to operate photo radar in school zone while school is in session, requires that police officer review video recording of conduct before issuing citation.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, Vice Chair Bentz, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chris Gorsuch, State Representative for House District 49. That includes the cities of Troutdale, Wood Village, Fairview, and the city of Gresham. I'm happy to be here this afternoon to speak in support of House Bill 3438. Aside from the recent passage of the photo radar in ODOT zones, currently only 10 cities in Oregon are allowed to operate photo radar. And when in operation, each photo radar unit may only be used for 4 hours at a time. They also have to have a uniformed officer with a marked vehicle present. The current law with those restrictions doesn't allow us to fully protect children who attend our schools, which are in session each day more than that four-hour time period. So House Bill 3438 proposes to make several changes that would increase the protection for children at school and in school zones. First, it would expand local control and allow any city in Oregon to install photo radar in school zones and only in school zones. And that's if they chose to do so. Our cities should not be denied the ability to protect students from dangerous drivers if they make that choice. Second, it would only allow photo radar in school zones to be operated between the hours of 7 in the morning and 5 in the evening, and only on days when school is actually in session. As anyone who's dropped off and picked up children from school, and I certainly know that, as probably Representative Parrish knows. There are two peak traffic times, just before school begins and then just after school ends. And so we shouldn't be limited to covering just one of those time periods because of that four-hour window, which is the current law. So we should be able to use these units to increase safety throughout the day. Finally, this particular bill would eliminate the requirement that a police officer be present when photo radar is used in school zones. This would free officers in already understaffed departments for other more pressing duties. However, and this is an important point, a commissioned police officer would still have to review the video and decide if they're going to go forward with the citation or not. And you'll hear some testimony from the chief of the Fairview Police Department. That's their current operation for their red light cameras, the same thing. So it isn't just that you get the ticket because of the camera. An officer actually makes a decision. And that would be the case here. And then there's just a couple of little statistics I want to share with you. School zones, 20 miles an hour. If a vehicle is traveling at 20 and strikes a pedestrian, the odds of the pedestrian dying is about 5%. If you raise the car speed by just 10 miles an hour, the odds of the pedestrian dying go up to between 37 and 45%. And if you get up to 40 miles an hour, the odds of the pedestrian dying is between 83 and 85%. So probably information, you may not have known the exact statistic, but you realize that as the speed goes up, the chance for serious injury also increases. There was a Montgomery County, Maryland, looked at this. The number of vehicles exceeding the speed limit dropped by 10 miles an hour dropped 70%. After they installed speed cameras in school zones. So school zone speed enforcement cameras work and should be given to all of our cities, and they should definitely have the opportunity to try and make our school zones safer for our school attending children. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Yes.
So is the real change here, Representative Gorsuch, just that because I take Market Street into Salem, there's two school zones there, and there's always a police officer there.
Yeah.
Knocking us.
Well, yeah, I know, I see those.
And I've not been pulled over yet, knock wood, so. Yeah.
What it is that a lot of, and she, Chief Johnson is here and can probably testify to this better. There are a lot of agencies that just don't have the people to be able to patrol those zones like some school or some police departments. And so this would help departments that are basically understaffed do more coverage. But you're right. There are. And the Oregon State Police is alive well in I-5, but that's a whole other issue.
Further questions? Yes.
Just that a question. I live a block and a half from Tigard High School, and we have and Durham Elementary School is down the road, and we have this the signs that say you're going this far.
That where they flash and right.
They flash. And first of all, people go, well, you can't do it in the morning because traffic's not moving. But and I know that the Tigard Police Department maybe once a week is out there, but again, it deals with staffing sort of issues. But it's also during the other times, especially over the lunch hour, where kids are leaving, that people are going far greater than the 20 miles, even though it's an indication of them. But I know it's jurisdiction by jurisdiction, and at least where that is, the police are there at least once or twice a week.
And you know, agencies do their best. For instance, my children attend Corbett Middle School and High School, which is up just east of Troutdale. Rural community, it's right out there as you're going up the old Columbia Gorge Highway. And we have a deputy that is assigned to that area. He's been there for a long time, and he tries to do his best to monitor speed. But if he gets a call, and he's it, so he's not, you know, he's not always able to be there.
Further questions? I have one. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I do. Yes, also, thank you, Co-Chair Chairman. Under Section 1, where it lists the jurisdictions that this would allow them to operate the photo radar, would we need to come back with legislation if other jurisdictions wanted to be added to this list? Is this exclusionary?
The list that you're seeing there, I believe, is the list that can currently use radar.
So this
would expand it to any city.
Any jurisdiction
or
that
county.
Wants to opt
right.
in. Okay, thank you very much.
Because now I think it's 10 cities.
Okay, thanks.
Further questions? Yes.
Mr. Chair, it is curiosity. Is,
yeah.
Do we know when the last student was actually hit in a school zone?
I would defer to the chief to respond to that.
Eugene.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Cameron.
I may be inaccurate or accurate. Representative Cameron, I believe there was one in Eugene within the last two or three years at middle school crossing.
Mm-hmm.
That comes to mind. It was, unfortunately, a very newsworthy event. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I have one.
Yeah.
Is the bill crafted in a way that removes the presence of the officer then across the board, including those listed cities?
No, certainly that's not the intent, and in reading the bill, I don't believe so. I think it's just designed for the school zone activity to have that requirement taken away.
I'm sorry, I should have made myself more clear. What I'm saying is, for the Albany, Beaverton, Bend, Eugene, mm-hmm. they also would no longer have to worry about in school zones police officers.
I believe so, yes.
So the bill is doing a couple of things. It's removing that requirement across the board.
Right.
And then it's allowing any city to utilize this device.
Correct. That's how we tried to craft the bill. So hopefully it still says that.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Some other folks signed up. I think we can have all three people come up. Ken Johnson, Glenn Post, and Becky Strauss. Or is it Strauss or Strauss? Strauss.
Thank you.
And why don't we start with the chief of police first?
That one makes sense. Good afternoon, Chair Bentz, members of the committee. My name is Ken Johnson. I'm the chief of police for the city of Fairview, and as of last night, I completed my term as president for the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, and mm-hmm. I'm proud to now say I'm an immediate past president, and I'm here on their behalf as well. I'm here to urge your support of HB 3438, which recognizes the advancement of technology with regard to accuracy and reliability of photo radar with video capability. This bill would allow any city to operate a photo radar enforcement program in a school zone between 7 a.m., 5 p.m. during those days schools are in session. Because video is a required component of this school zone photo enforcement program, and due to the improvement in technology, the requirement for a uniformed officer to operate the radar equipment is no longer necessary when operating it in a school zone under the provisions of this bill. And to answer your question, even when we do have police officers, if you have the resources to do so, tied up in a school zone operating radar, they're not out doing other proactive police activity and crime detection. So it frees up resources that we all are in desperate need of. I only have, if I'm lucky, two officers on duty. I have five schools in my city. I'm a city of about 9,000, and tying a police officer up running, and we have a school zone on Halsey Street and Gleason Street and 223, which are very busy streets in our city. So, and the other thing I wanted to point out is a police officer must still review it. A commissioned police officer must still review the data collected by the technology and must make an approval. Our current experience with photo radar is that this, and I track this every month, for the 7.5-8 months of experience that we have, officers are rejecting 50% of the images because they do not meet our criteria for issuing a ticket.
Did you mean
Radar. Photo red light.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you.
Okay.
The red light camera, we're rejecting about 50% or not approving about 50% of those. And the criteria that we and other agencies use is it has to be the same criteria an officer would use if they were making a traffic stop in the field. We're not going to change our threshold and our discretion with this technology. Passage of this bill will only impact photo radar in a school zone. It does not change the current requirements and restrictions for other photo radar enforcement programs as listed in statute. As with other photo radar programs, the registered owner of the vehicle cited must be the driver. Passage of this bill would be an important step in helping us keep our school children safe. In this time of shrinking government resources, we should embrace the advancement in technology that makes sense for public safety. This bill makes sense and will help us protect our children. I've taken this to the Fairview City Council, who has given their support. The Oregon Association Chiefs of Police urge your support of this bill, and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association also urge your support of this bill. So I would be happy to answer any questions. I have a technical expert here as well, but I certainly urge your support and passage of this important bill. Thank you.
Thank you, and let's take our center panelist next. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Glenn Post. By way of disclosure, I am employed by the largest photo enforcement company in the United States. I also have 14 years experience on a school board, 4 years as president. I am here simply to answer technical questions on how the system works. I am an Oregon resident. I live 42 miles due east of Seaside. There is no town to tell you about. I am a former deputy sheriff in Multnomah County, and I will entertain any of your technical questions. I am not going to espouse support or non-support for this bill because of my tie to the industry.
Thank you. Strauss.
Chair Benz, members of the committee, Becky Strauss here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to come chime in. We have a few concerns that I just want to raise, I think mostly for discussion's sake at this point, and maybe if they prompt questions, we can have a little bit of a back and forth with the technical expert here. And I do appreciate the time that Representative Gorsuch took earlier today for me to raise the concerns, and I learned a lot just speaking with the proponents before the hearing. So I just want to bring up two concerns that we have from the ACLU's perspective. I think generally the idea of being very intentional and careful about our surveillance tools. I think that when we come in one session, we have our photo red light scheme and our photo radar scheme that's very limited, and we are always concerned that each session we come back and either expand upon the use or erode some of the protections that we've put in place. We see that with photo red light this session. There's a bill to expand the use of the footage where that was not initially authorized with the initial law. Here we're looking to expand the number of jurisdictions that can use the cameras, the length of time that they're being used. I'm not sure about the sharing and access to the footage pieces, so maybe we can have a little bit more conversation about that. But I think just this larger idea about slowly, incrementally expanding upon what we've done so that we really are creeping to a place where surveillance is the norm. That's very uncomfortable for us from a privacy perspective. And I think becomes uncomfortable for us in this context from a policing perspective as well. Part of what this bill is doing is the conversation has noted is taking away a requirement that there actually be an officer there with judgment and context to kind of deal with situations as they come up. And so as we increasingly so take away the officer from the scene and put on a camera or some other type of technology to replace that work, we don't think it's a one-to-one exchange, and we think we're losing something with the boots on the ground policing that happens. I appreciate the fact that the bill includes a piece where an officer would need to review the footage before sending out a citation. Again, I don't think it's a one-to-one replacement. I think that the officer gains something with the 360 view of what's happening in the context and lose something by just simply reviewing the footage. And so there are concerns here. I think we absolutely want law enforcement officers to have the tools they need to keep children safe in school zones, and we don't want to stand in the way of that. We just hope that we're very thoughtful about the expansion and intentional about the sidebars that we put in place to protect the privacy while we're using surveillance technology. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Lively.
Chair Benz, my question has to do, I guess, with more tickle. I'm not clear on this review and approval, so how that impacts. And you talk about the criteria that they use, but I'd like to understand a little bit more. So we have this video, so I'd like to understand a little bit more how the officer goes through and looks at that and decides then if there's a...
And I can speak specifically to photo radar because I'm also one of the individuals that reviews that, and I went through the training so that I would understand it, so that we would be very careful when we brought this forward. And we sit down at a computer, we bring up images, still images, and a approximate 12-second videotape, and we actually watch it, and you can expand it to full screen, and so that we can watch before the violation, through the violation, and a few seconds after the violation. I think it does give us a 360 view. It significantly improves officer safety, so we're not out there in the middle of traffic risking the officers and the other motoring public safety, and it gives them a good view of the incident without being present. Does that answer your question?
And so in this case, the recording device, it records the speed. So there's something that shows the alleged speed. Is that correct?
Correct. And the jurisdictions will set the threshold of where that will trigger. That is not addressed in the bill. So is it 10 over, 11 over, 12 over? That would still remain the responsibility of the jurisdiction in contract with the company.
Thank you.
Representative.
Thank you. Did I miss who does that looking? I mean, is that your staff and your police force who goes through all those?
Reviews the videos? Uh-huh. Yes, it has to be a commissioned police officer.
Follow up?
Go ahead.
Thank you. So how many people do you have on force who do that, and how long, what percentage of the time of their job is screening that versus... And could you compare that to versus them out on the street collecting the same amount of data and tickets if they were physically there versus not there and have to scroll through everything?
I just gave this information to our city council. There are 14 commissioned officers on my staff, including myself. Five of us are trained to do this. Takes them initially about a minute to review the tape, 45 seconds to a minute to review it, approve it, or reject it. It's a pretty simple process. I estimated the other day that depending on any complications on a traffic stop, from the initial time of detecting a violation, making the stop, going through all the things that we do in the street, they can probably approve 35 to 40 red light ticket violations via this technology versus one traffic stop and issuing a ticket. So it's an extremely efficient way of enforcing. And right now, we're down 48% in violations in 7 months. So it is definitely effective. The other stats that I've reviewed in school zone tickets, it significantly reduces those speeding in school zones within a few months of implementation of this program. So it's very effective for keeping our kids safe.
Representative Betts? Thank you, Sharon. I have a couple of questions. The normal sign says when children are present, I guess I need to know how this works.
One of the requirements, I believe, in current statute that bleeds over to this, because this doesn't change anything else, is the requirement that flashing yellow lights must be present at the school zones before we can do the photo radar enforcement. So it would require at least that signage, and then it would be 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. for those school zones that have that. Now, it would be jurisdictional, correct? Responsibility of the jurisdiction. So those that have when children are present wouldn't be able to do this.
Follow up.
Please.
And I'd like to know how much these machines cost and how often they're calibrated and all of that normal stuff.
These machines are extremely expensive, which is why the private sector is putting them in rather than municipalities. They do not have enough money to go out and put $250,000 to $350,000 in a school zone. We, in our pricing models in Oregon and all the other manufacturers that are doing business here, use a per paid citation model. Basically, when the city of Fairview is paid for a red light ticket, we get $60 of the fine they collect. So it does. They never get upside down. They don't put any public money into this. It's all violator funded. If people do not like these things, simply quit violating the law and we'll all go into retirement.
Representative Bench, your question is, to mind for me, a hazy memory from 2007. in the Judiciary Committee when we talked about some of these issues, and I recall there not being what I thought at that point was an appropriate balance around external calibration and audits.
Oh, that was the other part of the question. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Is there any? Can you comment on how that part works? How frequently are the machines calibrated, and is there a cap on how much the vendor receives?
The machines are calibrated the same as a radar unit, a handheld radar or LIDAR unit in the police department, once a year.
By whom?
By, at this point, RHF is our contractor in California who does radar units all over California and does our speed sensing devices. In addition to that, we have a tech go out once a month with a handheld LIDAR unit and clock the speed of 10 cars and look at what the system says those 10 cars are doing. So once a month, at least 10 cars have to be the same on a handheld certified LIDAR unit as they are on our system. So it's only calibrated once a month or once a year, but it is certified as still being calibrated every 30 days to 31 days, once a month.
That's helpful. Thank you. And I jumped in on you. Please.
Oh, thank you. The whatever it is it tape or is it digital now that the image is captured upon? What is it that the folks actually look at, and how long is it retained?
Okay, we actually use, and as does the other contractor in the state of Oregon, digital still cameras to take pictures from the front and the back to catch the face of the driver and the license plate. And then there is a 12-second video, roughly 12 seconds. And what it amounts to is that video runs on a 6-second tape delay, like the NFL. Keep out bad words. Only our system says we want to see it actually progress into the violation. So during that delay, if a violation is detected, it says go back and save 6 seconds before the violation, 6 seconds after the violation. The video automatically dumps if there is no violation at the end of that 6 seconds. It's gone. The still images, if there is, and they're only taken when a violation is detected. There are no images taken unless there's a violation detected. Those still images by OAR and ORS are required to be deleted within 60 days if there is no violation, no citation issued. We are a private sector company. Storage space is very expensive. We don't wait 60 days. The minute the police have rejected it, within 4 or 5 days after that, those images will be gone from our storage unit, because simply we can't afford to store 12 megapixel pictures any longer than we absolutely have to.
Well, so you find someone who has violated it, and is the machine set at exactly the speed limit or a few miles over it?
That would be dependent on each jurisdiction. I also am the area manager for the state of Washington, which has this in statute and is actually using it. I have one city that's 8 miles an hour over. I have one city that's 10 miles an hour over. I have one city that's 11 miles an hour over. I'm narrow-minded enough to believe that all speed enforcement should be a percentage over, because 10 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour zone is extremely egregious. 10 in a 55 zone may not be quite so bad. It should be, if you're 25% over the speed limit, but that's me, not. If this were to pass and Fairview instituted it, Ken and the Fairview City Council would determine what the threshold speed would be, not the vendor.
Well, so if the person wants to see the tape, reflecting their violation of whatever that standard may have been, what do they do?
Every company in the industry maintains a website, a secure website that you can go to. You can see the still pictures and the full motion video in the comfort of your own home if you have a computer, or in a library, or anywhere there's internet access. You have to put in your license plate number, your citation number, a city code, so that it is secure and not everybody can go look at everyone else's. But those are available on the internet.
And the phone. So there are a series of requirements you have to meet in order to do this, one being that there has to be a sign up warning people of this fact. How do you prove that in this process, that indeed these other requirements of the statute were met at the time that particular photograph was taken?
Actually, we don't prove it during the process. If that went to trial under State v. King, those are all pretrial motion items about whether the signs were up, where the signs were up. The only thing proven at trial, if you don't file a King motion, are the elements of the crime. But the city has an evidence book with pictures of all the entrance signs, pictures of all the signs, locations of all the signs, maps. That goes to court with the officer every time they go to court. So they do have exhibits in court to show where they are and actual pictures of the signs and what's up there.
Thank you.
Other questions? I don't see any.
Thank you very much. My apologies for missing both of your testimony. I was watching while I was on a phone call, so I got some of it. But I trust the committee to have delved into a lot of the discussion here. With that, unless there are others who want to be heard on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Winkles.
Okay. While he's getting settled, is there anyone else who wants to be heard? I don't think we have anyone else signed up. Okay. You're the last.
Thank you, Chair Reed. For the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. I'm, among other things, a public safety lobbyist for the Oregon's municipalities. We appear in support of this legislation, and we would argue for this bill, even if the public finance fairy waved their magic wand and suddenly all police departments in the state of Oregon had a ratio of 2 per 1,000. We think this bill would be a good idea because it's a safe way to provide enforcement in a critical area. Every time a police officer turns their lights on, they have to go through their head a value judgment, and they have to recognize that there's a risk to themselves, to the public, and to the person that they're attempting to contact. In a school zone, it may not be practical and probably isn't in a lot of cases for that officer to light up their car and proceed past and hit and to go after a suspect because you have kids in crosswalks, you have heavy traffic. This provides us a safe way to provide a deterrent and an enforcement mechanism to protect kids in an area where the legislature has deemed that this needs heightened enforcement and heightened regulation. And with that, I will close my testimony and take questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, do you have any idea how much money this makes for the cities? Is there some sort of general rule that people follow? Because it seems like it would be there's no cost to the city because they don't have to buy the machine.
Chair Reed, Representative Bent. So the first $60 from the citation. So let's say you hit it's 10 miles an hour over, and I believe that is, Representative Gorsuch will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's a C violation at 10 miles an hour over. So the first $60 of that goes, the state skims that off the top. The next $60 goes to the company, and after that, there's not a lot left of that citation. And if you look at the collections rates, I can't give you an exact number because I don't know how many, it depends on how many tickets are written. Then you also have to factor in the staff time to review the citation. You know, we don't view traffic enforcement as a money-making operation. We view this as a public safety enforcement issue. That answers your question.
That was actually the question. So. This is viewed as something that you do to slow people down, not to raise money. That was the question.
Chair Reed, Representative Bentz, if we wanted to make money, we would find a clever way to take the posting provision out of the bill so they wouldn't see it. So,
And I'm going to go out on a limb and say the committee's not quite as interested in that possibility.
Right. And we don't want it.
Good. Very good. We're all agreed on that. Since there aren't any other questions, I'm particularly interested in this public finance fairy you mentioned and where we might find this.
Where are they?
Yeah, and how we might get that wand waved for cities and lots of other things. So I hope they'll get back to us on that.
Chair Reed, we do have two proposals in revenue.
Very good. Very good. Involving fairies. Very interesting. Okay. Unless there's anyone else who wants to testify, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3438. We're going to carry over the work session on House Bill 3438 to our next meeting. The committee, you'll note that there's been a rash of such carrying over of late. We have two more meetings on which during which we might be able to take action on House bills that are originating here. So expect a little bit more fluidity in the agendas over the next couple of meetings, and appreciate your flexibility on that. Anything else to come before the committee today? Representative Cameron.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we do need some more information on this, because we just heard a testimony here of $120, and I'm looking at some data here.
Perhaps I should reopen the public hearing on this bill for the moment.
If we're going to have future testimony, I'm just...
Let's follow up offline. I understand your
because concern. We've talked about this stuff in judiciary this year too. So
okay, I'll follow up offline.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
Okay. Other comments? I don't see any. Enjoy your weekend. See you on Monday. We're adjourned. Amazing. Yeah.